Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name's Charlie Wallace.
And I'm Adam Gobeski, and we have with us three guests. Today we have Doug Gobeski.
Oh, I'm just a guest? I'm not a special guest? I guess I'll take it.
It remains to be seen. You might get the special designation at the end.
This is a movie podcast, so we don't do any of the weird stuff, okay. Remember?
Thank you for having me.
Kevin Bredevoog.
Hey, excited to be here.
And Paul Wilcox.
Hey, happy to be here. Super excited to hear what you guys think about Redline.
Yes, as Paul has just said, we are here with our sci-fi shuffle once again. It's our 27th movie. It is the 2009 anime cult film Redline. Redline is the story of a group of racers in the future who consist of multiple species racing in a big race known as Redline on a planet that does not want them for reasons that were never made clear to me.
I mean, that's the movie.
Yeah, that's pretty, pretty good summary.
I assume the reasons were racism.
I think there is a line at some point about exposure of military secrets, like that they were doing intergalactically illegal things. Like,
oh, yeah, for sure.
And they didn't want exposure. It was a pretty thin justification.
That to me felt like an unintended side effect rather than the reason they're doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt to me like the reason they're racing on this planet that does not want them is to be dicks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the reason they picked it to be there. Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt like it was like, it'll make it crazier and more dangerous.
Yeah. It's just like us going, all right, the next Enduro race is in North Korea, guys. Or
whatever. Only one vehicle has to make it past the finish line. Doesn't matter what happens to the rest of them.
But we should talk a little bit about this Mug Floats Zero Sugar Vanilla Howler so that I can drink something on the podcast. This is a new flavor of Mug Root Beer that I saw in the store.
Does it turn you into a werewolf?
Let's find out. Oh, right. I forgot that Pepsi is bad at vanilla flavors.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's very chemically. Not great. Would not recommend.
Oh.
I'm still going to drink it because it's the only thing I have in front of me, but
is it even worth it to try it out?
You know, maybe try out the full sugar version that I'm sure exists. Maybe the chemical is a side effect of the vanilla mixing with the zero sugar. I don't know. But what I really wish was that I had some garlic parmesan Doritos to wash this down with. But alas, I don't. Is there anyone else?
I mean, I've got some ultimate garlic parm flavored Doritos here.
Oh, well, let me live vicariously through you then.
Celebrating 250 years of America. Doesn't smell horrific. Immediate thought is this is similar to Cool Ranch. Yeah, I mean, it's different. And oddly, I feel like I can taste... no, it's the cheese. It's the parm that I'm tasting. Yeah, okay. You know how Parmesan has that vaguely, like, not quite foot, not quite wood scent to it?
Yep.
It nails that in terms of the smell, too. No, these are actually pretty good. Like I don't think it would be a go-to, but I do think that Adam is missing out.
I mean, I'm not missing out because I got to hear you talk about it. So, as I said, I'd be curious.
Why is this associated with the 250th anniversary of our nation? I'm just curious. I mean, garlic parmesan doesn't seem like something distinctly American.
Because it was brought here by immigrants, and immigrants are what made America great.
No. Okay.
Celebrate boldly with a blast of delicious garlic and parm flavor.
But everything's bold. Everything's a blast with them.
That is all you're going to get in terms of ad copy. In fact, it says, celebrating 250 years of America. It's got one of those like little ribbon things. So like the ribbon says 20 years of America, 26. And it also says limited edition next to the 250. However, they rely on you to do the math in order to identify that they're referring to Independence Day, signing of the Declaration of Independence. There's no mention of 1776 on here.
Those bastards.
You got to do the math yourself.
What is this, a Jaguar? That's a deep cut joke for all my Atari Jaguar fans out there. Do the math.
Yeah, like, I was worried this was going to be overpoweringly garlicky. And there is garlic there, but it's balanced well. Like, I really do think they did a good job with this.
So not like the Lay's that I ate that just tasted like garlic? Eating cloves of garlic?
Okay, to be fair, those were garlic sauce.
Oh, that's true. They got it right. I wish they hadn't.
I gotta put these away. Like, I'll be back, guys. Those are a definite must try.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Like, if I hadn't put them on the, you know, out of reach back in the cupboard, I would probably just be eating them until the bag is gone.
Okay.
All right. So back to Redline. Let's start with the big question. Had anyone seen this before? I had not. Did not know it existed until Paul suggested it last Sci-Fi Shuffle episode.
That's a second from me. I never heard of it, but I've seen it.
Thirded, have not heard of it. Had not heard of it. I've heard of it now and had not seen it prior to 24 hours ago or so.
I had seen several seconds of it and knew of it from that because somebody had, you know, just posted something on social media, a typical engagement bait where it's like, wow, this is the most amazing thing ever. Why don't they make more movies like this? When Paul said that this was what we were watching, I was like, oh, I think that's the movie that I remember hearing about. And it was.
Nice. And yeah, I had seen this before. I had heard about it probably quite a few years back, just watching things about anime. And didn't watch it until like movie one of the Sci-Fi Shuffle, because I was like, well, let's see if this is good, because I need sci-fi animes to watch or to suggest. And then I watched it probably like three more times after that.
Like in a row or?
No, just kind of scattered. Yeah, because I think for some reason after I suggested it, then I had to watch it again after that. And then again yesterday. And I'm sure there was another time in between there. So I've seen it.
This is like your fourth viewing?
I think so, yeah.
Is there any particular reason you chose this just because you liked it and wanted us to experience it? Or are you trying to teach us something?
No, I don't know. It's not educational material. but there's not that much like it. And there's not a lot of like modern sci-fi feature film animes out there. And just knowing some of the things about it, that it was almost entirely hand-drawn, took a long time in production. It's just really, really a spectacle of animation that I wanted everyone to experience.
Well, that sounds like a great opening to talk a little bit about the history of this movie, the backstory. And so, Charlie, what do you got for us?
There's not tons of backstory here. I mean, we know the director is Takeshi Koike because they tell us that audibly at the beginning of the movie, which is kind of cool.
That
if I ever made a movie, I would announce my own name.
I know that. Did you guys all watch the dub?
Oh, was
yes,
that a dub only thing?
Yeah. I could not find a sub version. I tried looking, but couldn't find one.
Okay. I just want you guys to know that directed by Takeshi Koike part is also in, it's the same in the Japanese.
Oh, good. But yeah, this is a hand-drawn film. It took 7 years to produce, and I think it's just kind of become the sort of a cult film over time. I mean, the director is known for things like, I think, parts of the Animatrix, and a lot for his animation and his art direction and things like that. But I think he's also directed some of the more recent, like, Lupin the Third movies. So it's been around a little bit. But, I mean, besides just the release of the movie at, you know, some festivals and maybe not making a lot of money back, there's not tons of backstory here.
One thing, I guess, is that, you know, just the background of Takeshi Koike, like, I think he's pretty much a key animator at Studio Madhouse. It's like obvious this was directed by an animator.
Yeah, does that mean like keyframe animation when you say key?
Yeah, like keyframe animation.
Okay. Not just that he's like an important guy, but specifically what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah. He was a actual animator for most of his career, like until this directorial debut. Another random bit I saw about him from an interview. Didn't watch the whole thing, but I'm paraphrasing that there. Oh, also, I I forgot. There is a prequel OVA that I didn't know about until I researched this a little today. That is called
Yellow Line.
It should be. It was called.
No, we saw that at the beginning of this one. It would be called Green Line.
Be green, yeah, Green Line. It's called Trava First Planet, and it had the characters Trava and Shinkai, who were in Red Line.
Yeah, so like the crying guy, and
guy, and like the Zoidberg kind of guy.
Crying guy and his friend, got it.
Yeah, and he did say that the theme of Red Line. Like he wanted it to be the theme to be information overload, to be an overwhelming visual assault.
Well, I think at that it succeeded because a lot of times it felt to me like the visual equivalent of eating like 5 pounds of Skittles in one sitting.
Trying to figure out when to blink.
But yeah, it's definitely a visually very stylistic and colorful film.
I know this is obviously anime, but what is the exact art style they used where like the shadows were just pure black and it's kind of like a lot of solid colors rather than color gradients? Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I feel like there's a term for that. Like
it had like kind of 80s vibes almost. I mean, at least that's when I saw it, what it kind of reminded me of. I meant to look it up, but didn't.
I believe that actually there was some, what was something else I read that Takeshi Koike was influenced by, to some extent, by American comic books like Frank Miller.
Oh.
There's a little bit of like an American comic look to it.
But what little I'm currently reading, it doesn't seem like there's like a word for it. It's just like, this is how this dude likes making things look, which, fair.
Yeah, like it's not cell shaded, but it's not.
No,
like,
exactly.
Not color gradients. It's like flat gradients, something like that.
You know? I liked it a lot. I mean, I thought it is a visually stunning film, if absolutely nothing else. I mean, the plot somewhat thin. I'm not complaining about it, but it was incredible to look at.
It's interesting because kind of watching this, the overall vibe I got was almost like Judge Dredd, the comic strip specifically, filtered through a Japanese sensibility.
No.
Oh. Nice.
I think just something about the sort of over the topness and the desolate kind of landscapes that you see kind of looks like the cursed earth part of like the Judge Dredd world and things like that.
They care about justice.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote 3 notes down and one of them was ACAB, so based on what was this character's name? Gore Rider?
President or
Gory Rider. Like
yeah.
The Gorilla Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, him. Yeah.
Yeah, this kind of made me think of Death Race. I don't know if anyone's seen Death Race or Death Race 2000. I forget which one it's called, or maybe it's called both of those.
Nope.
Oh, yeah. Like a 70s movie where it's kind of this. So like crazy characters like racing and trying to kill each other. But also reminded me of Wacky Races.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
I'm like,
takes me back.
I don't know how much more story you need than that if that's exactly what you're going for. It's like, oh, there's people racing and they're fun.
Yeah, it's not the deepest plot.
No, that is definitely something that on repeat viewing, I'm like, yep, there's no, like, I got the plot the first time, you know, or what matters of it. I feel like because of that too, like the pacing is like, it's a feature length film, but they can't just be like extreme racing for all like hour and 40 minutes or something. So there has to be like this kind of like lull in the middle. But I'm always like, okay, let's get to like let's get to Red Line.
Generally,
yeah. It's my thought in the middle of the movie.
It is I do kind of like the middle part, and it does raise the tension a little bit. Like you're anticipating the Red Line instead of going straight to it. But they do things that's like, true. Here's the television show that explains all of the characters.
Yeah. Which I,
you know,
I
it's still
like
fun. It's still fun. Yeah.
You know, because they're now, all such wacky characters that it's like you kind of need these like little profiles of them. You know?
I mean, so many characters that I can't remember a lot of them.
I remember Machine Head. He sort of had more plot relevance than some of the others.
Yeah, especially at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were the super
the
princess was like helping facilitate the race that
and they're okay. Magic, but they promised not to use magic.
They promised.
And they didn't, I don't know, that I remember They did go into mech mode and suplex some guys, but
I like the idea that there's magic in this world, but we're just not, you know, we saw some.
and she's like, what was it like that only that, like the
only the princess only, like, was the able to use remote magic?
Yeah.
Like legally, I think.
Like, yeah, there's all of these hints all over the place about like, oh, if we wanted to write more or go in more into depth of the stuff, we could. However, that's not this is not that kind of movie.
Yeah, it would be like an insane world to
flesh oh, yeah.
further.
I think for me, my favorite of those little vignettes was probably the two guys going and sabotaging the orbital disintegration cannon.
Oh, yeah. That,
it was weird to me, though, that made like galactic news, but that they didn't know the people who owned the cannons work.
The only way I could figure with that was that they weren't talking about that. They were talking about the power outage from earlier. Like, because there was the power outage earlier. And so maybe the news was talking about that's the only thing I could figure. Because I thought the same thing.
Like, established that they were like, they like to sabotage
stuff. Yeah.
And then they go and sabotage the orbital.
Yeah, I think they were talking about just like the anti-aircraft fire or something was sabotaged by the power grid going down. Like the news, I don't think mentioned the disintegration cannon.
No, I mean, that makes sense, Adam. That was definitely me thinking the exact same thing and then stopping for a second and said they must have meant this other thing or else it doesn't make sense. Giving them the benefit
I also didn't understand what the guys in the robot suits were doing and why it was taking. Like, I mean, I understood what they were doing, but I didn't really understand their motivation for doing it.
Yeah, do you know who those guys were from? Like, were they associated with?
I think they were rebelling. Like there was like one throwaway line about how like it was, I don't remember, rabble rousers or people who were trying to start an uprising or something like
were
that.
They like miners or something? Why did they think
that
like
was like a workers revolt using their mining equipment?
And they were revolting.
Funky boy.
Funky boy. And it was that was where the movie really went to the next level for me. Side note, but I think there was a reference to the fact that maybe part of the reason they were rebelling was because they were all very pro red line and had just had enough of Robo World's bullshit. But yeah, I don't think it was fleshed out any more than that. Funky boy. And then the general turned into some weird kaiju for no reason, and I don't think we really address what happened to him. I think it's just like, he's this now.
What do you mean, no reason? The reason was so that he could go fight Funky Boy.
What? Yeah.
The regenerated Funky Boy.
Yeah, right. I forgot, like, I sometimes would forget that Funky Boy regenerated. I'm like, oh, he's gone already, and then I'm like, oh no, good, he comes back.
As soon as it's weird because as soon as all that stuff is no longer relevant to JP, like it just drops out of the movie. Like what happens to the president? Like what happens to Funky Boy or this other kaiju? Like that battle is still happening somewhere. Yeah. Like we never hear a follow up.
That part of the movie gave me real Nausicaa vibes.
Yeah. I thought the exact same thing. The animation of like the exploding scream thing was super similar to the I don't remember what they're called from Nausicaa, but yeah, I had the exact same thought. The only other thing I was going to say was the movie, I mean, to Charlie's point where they don't go back to it, the movie just sort of ends as soon as the race is over. There is like no follow-up whatsoever. Like, cross the finish line, movie is done. They could all be executed by the robo army like 10 minutes later. I don't know, because all I know is that these people who met each other like 24 hours ago but also in the past one time are deeply in love and they want to race.
One of them remembers.
Yes.
No, only one of them for sure remembers. We don't know about the other.
That's all right, Joe. They didn't even really establish that. Yeah,
look, clearly love conquers all. Robot world defeated because of the power of love.
Hmm, yeah.
It literally said really won by
the skin of his pompadour.
His ducktail.
That was, I couldn't remember what they called it. Yeah.
Is that what that is?
I did love that they brought it back around, that it was his hair that allowed him to cross the finish line. Or anyone else. I also enjoyed, and I wouldn't say it really reminded me of these types of movies in any way besides this, but I was getting real, like, angry Dean in, like, a 1970s college frat movie vibes off the president. I don't know. Just the way he was pissed off at everything.
I mean, to me, that feels like, and I'm just going to show my biases, that feels like just a side effect of dubs. Like, I feel like most Japanese dubs that I've listened to have that element of just like, everything's turned up to way too high.
Fair. I mean, even the animation, though, he would get like super pissed. Because, yeah, I agree. I couldn't find the original Japanese anywhere. And honestly, for a movie like this, it is nice to be able to just watch what's happening instead of reading.
Well, I had to keep, not to interrupt, but I had to keep pausing and pulling out my Google Translate app to figure out what the little caption said.
Oh, yeah.
And what did they say?
Mainly, they were like either locations or like 2 days before or... But like the movie opens with like information that may be helpful that is completely untranslated, at least in the version I saw. Explaining how like ground cars are like almost extinct in favor of air cars, but like some people are keeping up their tradition and racing and stuff. Yeah.
It was like in the future where cars have been replaced by hover cars. It was basically like, oh, these old school racers are crazy.
I mean, there wasn't a lot to it beyond that. But
pretty much basic setup, but it does establish that driving on the ground is not the standard in their world.
Yeah, but yeah, that caption was not just a Koike film.
I don't know if this is a point that's brought up in the movie. It probably doesn't matter, but are they limited in the number of like NOS capsules they can have? Or, like, are they super expensive, or are they going to destroy the car?
That was the limitations of the equipment.
Yeah, that was covered in the dialogue.
Well, a lot of, like, he's going to kill himself, and I'm like, oh, okay.
Well, no, they explicitly said something about you could only do it twice.
Oh,
okay. And then when they got the Airmaster engine, said something about it was able to do 3 stove drops or whatever, drops, whatever it was called.
Yeah, he specifically requested a more robust, whatever the thingy they put the NOS capsules into. Or the super NOS capsule, the golden mushroom.
Golden mushroom?
That would be in Mario Kart. I don't remember what the fancy thing that girl character, I don't know anyone's name in this movie, was wearing around her neck.
That's Steamlight.
Steamlight, okay.
Yeah, no, I know what a Steamlight is. I just don't know what a golden mushroom is.
It's better than a regular mushroom in Mario Kart. You can keep pressing it over and over again, and it keeps giving you boosts.
I never see a gold mushroom because I'm always in burst.
Yeah, gotta get that horn.
Just all green shells or whatever, or like coins.
Bananas. Coins and bananas. Just hold them behind me nonstop.
I think we've covered the entire movie. I'm going to be real with you. Like, there was... I did like the multi-armed, I don't know how he was related to JP, sort of mechanic guy, but who wasn't the main mechanic. I don't remember how their jobs were different. The junk dealer, thank you. But I don't have anything much more deep to say other than I liked that guy, especially when he was drinking at the end and blew up.
He won the race for him. Like,
oh, he absolutely did.
He's the hero of Redline, really.
I had questions about how that
didn't kill a bunch of people with this, a bunch of mobsters with a gun, and and then blow up his guy's car. Then he wouldn't know.
Well, look, if Frisbee hadn't fallen in with the mob, then I don't know that JP would have gotten to Redline at all.
That's true.
Well, maybe would have. Maybe would have made it in less exciting fashion, but like he made it in because he was essentially the people's choice, and you know that's largely because of his come from behind almost victory at Yellow Line.
Which was
kind of scripted.
They had referenced that, I want to say they called it Blue Line, that he had done amazingly in a prior race, and I think it was referenced that because Frisbee sold out to the mob, he was able to like build a car worth racing in to begin with. So yeah, I mean, I think it very much is at least partially to his credit that JP is racing at all.
Or they had put a bunch of money on a race and lost it, and so that Frisbee was in debt to the mob and like could never work his way out of it. Like, I think JP says it's his fault, right?
Oh,
he's like, he mentions that like one time. Yeah, but then there's like other races that they threw. Yeah.
How do we feel about JP as a character, as a protagonist, as one of the protagonists? Did we like him? Did we Think he was insufferable, somewhere in the middle? Was he super cool?
He's a cool dude. He had a switchblade comb.
I mean, he was a serviceable main character. With, yeah, he was there and he raced. And when he raced, it was very exciting to watch him race.
I do think about that, like, oh, he does the job. But then I'm like, I don't think I necessarily need or want more out of his character. He's pretty single-minded motivations.
How about Sonoshi?
I feel kind of similarly to JP.
Yeah, I mean,
like they're meant for each other. They're both just like, I love to race or what, and that's all I want to do is win the race.
It almost feels like a really cool music video that they decided retroactively they could turn into a movie, so they just added a few like plot elements to some of the characters and then just kind of went with it. Like she existed primarily as a vessel to watch the TV so we could see all the other racers be introduced. Like deep characterizations was not the reason to watch this movie for sure.
They're like, this scene isn't interesting enough. Learning about these characters, make sure she takes her top off.
Yeah, that too.
I had questions about that.
Okay, go.
At the risk of being real weird about it, I felt like when we saw her with her shirt off, didn't match what it looked like with her shirt on.
I'm going to need you to explain that one, Finn.
Which?
I'm going to need you to not explain that. I feel like whatever your point is, explanation cannot possibly improve it.
Do you just mean she looked like she was wearing a padded undergarment there?
Yeah, except it didn't move like a padded undergarment. That's why I had a question.
Yeah, I don't know how much thought they put into the boob jiggle physics of this movie.
I mean, there is quite a bit of boob jiggle physics throughout the movie.
It is the future, if that, you know, potentially addresses your concerns.
Is gravity the exact same? You know, maybe it's like 0.9 gravity.
It's not really a gravity issue so much as a size issue. Come on, Charlie, get into the weeds with me here.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember. So, oh God, this is the dumbest conversation I've had on the podcast. Are you suggesting they were larger while she was clothed or unclothed?
Clothed.
While clothed. Well, I mean, then it could be a bra situation.
Phenomenon sometimes.
Yeah. There's anti-gravity engines. There could be anti-gravity, you know, support brassieres that just, you know, give that effect.
Guys are going to make
Wow, that would actually be like...
Racing clothes are kind of, you know...
No, hold up. That would be like the ideal use for anti-gravity tech, wouldn't it? Like support undergarments like that, right?
Yeah, like in Dune, where you got the guy floating around, Harkonnen.
No, I'm just saying it would address a common complaint.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you could have localized microgravity. Yeah. I, for one, would definitely wear the anti-gravity underwear so that my balls could float.
I feel like you want like just a little bit of gravity at least, because you don't just want them jangling all over the place. Whatever parts we happen to be talking about here.
I've just rewatched the appropriate frame and I withdraw my objection.
Simple misremembering.
Yeah. But now I have a great blog photo for you, Charlie.
Adam gets out a ruler and starts in his calculator and starts to figure out the scale, see if it's appropriate.
Factors.
So one thing I don't know we've talked about too much, the detail on all the random characters throughout the world is really insane. Just in like the one-off shots where there's like, maybe just coming from watching a lot of anime shows when it's just like, oh, every frame has like, you know, a dozen fully animated unique creatures in it, like all moving around.
Yeah,
I was pretty pretty impressed by that. And also, like, I felt like it gave the impression of, like, even though it was a pretty, like, almost kind of apocalyptic-ish, Mad Max-ish feeling world, it seemed like everyone was kind of, like, happy that, like, it wasn't, like, a desolate world.
Well, it's a refugee planet, right?
Yeah, wait, I guess that would be the moon, scenes that were, those where they, like, stayed for, like, pre-race training or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems
but
like
then there was like the other world. I don't know what other worlds, like the what yellow line was on or whatever.
they really did create a vibrant universe that feels like it could be a springboard for a series or at least a few other movies or something along those lines. I mean, I think there was an entire race of dog people that were just kind of like, they were there. There are dog people.
The first like three characters we see are like dog people. I'm like, is everybody dog people?
I thought it was going to be a dog person movie. Yeah,
I know. I literally was like, I thought it was a human I saw on the poster.
Was it a dog person? That combined with the introductory text that was in Japanese made me genuinely think that I was watching the wrong movie.
Another thing I kind of liked about like the race audiences is there was at least a few times where I got kind of like Death Clock vibes about Redline, where people are just like getting blown off like into the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah! Yes. Oh, and that poor dad, he was just trying his best to operate a camera that somehow he had not tried to use prior to this race.
Trying to decide whether I hated the dad or the kid more.
Yeah.
Take the lens cap off, Dad. Yeah, Dad.
I mean, in his defense, he was pointing the camera at himself and had the lens cap on. Like, that's pretty rough.
You guys didn't find that relatable as fathers?
Oh, sure. Doesn't mean that I enjoyed it.
He hates himself.
I saw a lot of myself in that.
Yeah.
Me too, in that I dunk on my kids for being completely incapable of doing things constantly.
Yeah, like I even liked where you've got the president of Robo World, and it seems like, you know, they're all powerful or whatever, but then they talk about the underworld and all this illegal gambling, and they're like, oh yeah, like the underworld won't stand for it if they like shut down this racing thing. So like they're super powerful too, and so it's like gonna go on anyway. So yeah, lots of like little things here, like I'd kind of like to hear more about this if there was the
like
part of the movie.
There's a lot of single lines that established an entire like whole thing that could be a plot line, but it's not.
Just world building, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it does a great job of that.
I really did enjoy a lot of the insane tech, and they're gonna operate the laser for the first time, and he the guy like gets in that weird like cube thing with like the scrolling symbols on it. Like I'm like, that's badass.
Yeah.
Or like when the troops like all kind of deploy through the tubes and like get in and like drop in their ships and like the thing zips up to their necks.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And the head plugs. That's pretty cool.
But yeah, every few minutes or even seconds sometimes there's something new. Like some new concept or something new visually to look at. It's never a boring movie.
Yeah. I mean, again, plot wise, it is they're going to do the race and then they do the race. But I don't really think this movie needs at all any more than that. I mean, it absolutely accomplishes what it sets out to do, which is be, what did someone said, they described it as a visual assault. I mean, but in like a good way. I mean, I enjoyed watching it. It was stunning. It was incredible. I can't remember the last time I saw that much just wild hand-drawn animation. And did someone say it wasn't entirely hand-drawn? I thought it was.
It was, but with the exception of a very few tiny amount of like particle effects that you probably wouldn't even like notice.
Like some of the pink shiny magics kind of stuff? Or...
Yeah, like possibly some of that. I don't know. This was from I feel like at this point I need to cite the Super Eye Patch Wolf YouTube video, why Redline is an amazing movie and why that matters today, because that's where I got a lot of this information. But I think he did show like a small clip. So there is some sort of primary source out there that was like, yeah, this was the only time, because he really did want control over like every single, you know, he wanted it to be hand drawn. There was just, I think, a few things that made sense to do in particle effects. So probably the pink dust type kind of thing, or like minor elements of certain explosions or magic effects or whatever. But it really is. I mean, it's a shame that for all that work, it did not like
take the world
do that well in the box office in Japan.
While I love it for what it is, it would be kind of a hard sell to a mass market. Like, I don't know how you make a trailer out of this that's not just like a more literal assault on your senses of a bunch of random happening. Like, there's barely enough dialogue to make it seem like there's a real plot here. Still, you'd feel like they could sell it on the... When did this come out?
It had its film festival debut in 2009, but theatrically released in Japan October 2010.
I mean, I don't know. It feels like that's far enough into the everything is CG now era that there would be some novelty to having something completely hand-drawn released. But I mean, at the same time, I know nothing of the Japanese consumer and their preference in movies.
I do think it is not that compared to the other anime movies that will do better in the box office, are much broader appeal than this, likely. This is definitely feels like to me like a you know, an anime fan's anime movie.
Whoa, are you saying there are people you would not recommend this to?
No, I recommend
people
it to
with
everyone.
Heart conditions,
everyone should be an anime fan. That's
a history of seizures, sensitivity to light.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, I mean, is there anything we want to talk about that we haven't yet?
I enjoyed how Funky Boy got awakened.
Oh, that's right. We haven't talked about Funky Boy.
It was the, what was that guy's name? Gory Tank? Gory Cop?
He just crashed.
Gory Rider? Crashes.
Gory Rider just is completely lost and ends up, you know, crashing into the thing that's keeping Funky Boy in stasis.
Yeah.
They had even set up a plot line for those, like, whatever rebels to wake him up, and then decided, you know what, nah, we're just gonna go this entirely separate way of waking him up. Let's just do it.
You know how they have these big, like, custom mining, like, mech suits that are putting obviously huge amounts of force, like, against this lid? How about, like, a guy just crashes through and, like, lands with the force of gravity and that
he smashed the thing that made it all work.
Yeah, like through the top of the, was there like a dome or something?
I kind of got the impression that it was the two of them combined, like the workers doing that and him kind of putting it over the top by smashing that one part.
Oh, I see. So he was kind of like the pickle jar.
Yeah.
You know, situation. He pressed the button that actually opened it.
Yeah.
And did I get this right? Like, Funky Boy and maybe that other kaiju thing are bioweapons? It's things that they don't want people to see?
Yeah.
Like, that was what
was
they're trying to hide?
It was super illegal. For sure it was illegal. I don't remember if they used the word bioweapon specifically, but yeah, some sort of living...
It was either bioweapon or biological weapon.
Yeah, I think the subtitles said bioweapon, yeah.
I don't fully understand. I get. Do they have the means to transport Funky Boy elsewhere? Like, it just sort of seemed like... I guess they could turn it against their enemies on planet, but I didn't understand why Funky Boy was a practical weapon.
I don't think that he was. He was like a research project, and they didn't want him to get out. And that's what, you know, he's like, he's not ready. He needs to learn how to listen.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
But it was like those other guys that freed him, you know, and that's why they're like, oh, crap, we got to kill Funky Boy. Like, immediately.
Oh, God. Whoever thought to... sorry, did anyone watch it in Japanese? Was it basically literally translated to Funky Boy?
Yeah,
or...
like, Funky Boy.
I did appreciate the president ordering the guy to use the orbital disintegration cannon on Funky Boy. Because he didn't want him to, you know, suffer too much.
Get him in one hand.
I thought that was nice. Like, it showed that, you know, the president wasn't like a monster or anything.
Yeah, really, the president was the, you know, he was the softy. It was, what's his name?
The military, the head military guy?
Colonel Volton.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember every single character super well so we could talk about every single one of them.
Yeah, because there was the two guys that sabotaged the orbital weapon, but then there was also two other people.
Yeah, which one? Because there was it...
Were those the ones that, like, Gory Rider
was it
had,
Lin, there was like
arrested or something?
No, well, that's... I thought they were the sabotagers.
Yeah.
Oh, that was, yeah, but then there was two others.
Then there were, like, two people from Earth, right?
Yeah.
Like, the kind of nerdy guys.
Was that Todoroki and Miki?
Yeah.
Like where they burrow underneath.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Ground. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That was actually awesome. I was like, oh, this is like the core all over.
That's why you picked this.
Yeah. There needs to be high speed subterranean drilling.
Okay, I'm trying to count through. So there's Machine Head, there's JP, there's female lead character whose name I've already lost again.
Tornoshi McLaren.
Her, perfect. So that's three. There's the magic twins, there's the cop.
The Superboy?
The Superboyns, yeah.
Boy and Bose. The cop and the people the cop was chasing. That gets me to six. Then there's the two people from Earth. Who was the eighth? Because there were eight racers, I think.
Was that the red duck looking guy? The
guy who the crying guy was running after. Yeah. That team as well. Okay. That's the crew. That's everyone.
Nice. We did it.
Yay. Zoidberg.
And there's a 42 track soundtrack to this movie. I wonder if I can find that.
2 minutes per song, roughly.
Yeah, wow.
Went continuously through the entire thing. Oh, I thought of a thing that we hadn't talked about. The mob guy or mafia, whatever he is, I did not care for the way he kept rubbing whatever he was rubbing on his gums. That was just the
guessing
really
cocaine or cocaine equivalent.
Future cocaine, yeah. But man,
somebody else did it for him.
At one point. There was, honestly, the fact that like during the first race in the movie it kept like cutting to that scene with that gross mob guy like almost made me not want to like keep watching the movie. Like I'm glad I did, but I was like, as soon as it cut to that guy, I was like, we can't watch this on the march. Like, look at that guy. Listen to the sound of his gums.
We have standards here.
All right, so what did everybody think of Redline?
I thought it was face meltingly awesome.
Okay.
And I would recommend it to anyone who's looking for a cool movie with cool racing.
I was a little worried watching it that I wasn't cool enough to be watching it. I don't know. It's very hyperactive in a cool way, but also sometimes in weird ways. Like one of the thoughts I had watching this movie was Paul picked another weird movie. So probably around the time the guy was gumming it up. So yeah.
So just to be clear, your options are for Paul's stuff, weird movie or the core. And people complained about the core.
Yeah. I have no recourse but to like because of the core, I'm just gonna only pick obscure and intense movies.
Gotcha.
And we love you for that. Although I am on record as enjoying the core.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your service.
I'm definitely not mad I watched the movie. I'm not sure I enjoyed it as much as the rest of you sounds like enjoyed it. To me, it was like, yeah, this is fine. It's incredibly shallow. I don't know that that's a bad thing, but you know, it is just is a thing I noticed. And
I think it's a very fair criticism of the movie.
It's a racing movie, and then partway through, they also give you a giant kaiju battle.
I mean, like, that is
completely untelegraphed.
But that also kind of contributed to this feeling of just like, there's too much happening and I'm just not cool enough to get it, man. So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not mad I watched it. I'd be potentially interested in watching it again once I sort of knew what I was getting into. But equally, I can sort of see why this may not have caught the Japanese box office on fire. It's very more.
Might even say most.
Yeah.
I pretty much agree really with what everyone has said so far. I mean, there's no plot worth mentioning on this. No one's like going to message boards and being like, oh guys, like it was so deep. Like it is visually incredible. I mean, I absolutely loved both the art style and just the hand animated nature of the whole thing. I mean, it's a movie I could almost just like watch on mute or have like on in the background and occasionally just glance over at it and see like shiny things happening and get almost the same experience, or at least like a version of the movie that didn't have the dialogue track. I'd hate to miss out on some of the explodey and shiny noises. Of the movies we have watched, I guess Mad God immediately comes to mind, but I'm sure there were others, like where the plot really wasn't the point of it. Like, I would say this is my favorite. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it despite the almost complete lack of story, which is usually what I'm going to a movie to see. So I think the fact that I did enjoy it as much as I did is, you know, big credit to this film.
I enjoyed it pretty much the whole way through. And like, you know, as we've already said, there wasn't tons of plot, but I didn't think it needed it. I think the movie knew what it wanted to be and it was just gorgeous and kind of overwhelming to look at sometimes. And, you know, the only thing that doesn't age super well is just the hyper sexualization aspect of it. But it's been, you know, 17 years since it came out, and maybe they would have added that. Who knows? But I'm definitely giving it an A+ because it's definitely the only movie that I've ever seen that has the line, "Mr. President, we can't let Funky Boy run loose like that. He's going to destroy Robo World." I paused it and I wrote it down because
I think I need to watch the dub now. Just to
really it's so good.
It's a lot of fun.
Why? What was the sub version of that line?
I mean, it was probably pretty much the same. It's just it doesn't hit the same when I don't actually understand it. You know, like
with a rushed voice actor trying to say all of the syllables as quickly as possible before their mouth stops moving. Yeah.
On that note, yeah.
On that note, Charlie, this would be the second movie that I can name with the line of dialogue, "This aggression will not stand."
Yeah, I mean, obviously I liked it a lot enough to watch it several times and insist that you all watch it. You know, it's not perfect. Like I do agree with the, you know, thin plot criticisms. And actually sometimes I find myself like, it's a movie I'll pop on because I'm like, I want to watch that first race. Like I've watched that first race on its own just like a few times. Like I'll start the movie and then be like, well, I have to do other stuff now. But if I was more invested in the plot, the middle would feel more important, or maybe I would like it more, but it did feel kind of like the weaker part where I'm like, okay, I'm getting a little, the beginning of it like set me up to be like high adrenaline, and then I had trouble slowing down through the middle and just kind of wanted to get to red line, you know. But other than that, I mean, yes, that's true. I mean, that helped, you know. And then that was right, you know, and when the characterization of all these wacky characters helped a lot. I think it's really almost just the kind of, childhood friend sort of trope kind of stuck in there was like, okay, that's not that, like the love story was obviously not very exciting, but I can see why it's there. It's an integral part of the plot. But yeah, mostly I just, I really hadn't seen anything like this before, and I'm not sure how much there will be since. There are other movies that are similarly kind of high octane through a lot of it, but nothing with the real, you know, a visual style like this. So it's really one of kind. Definitely recommend it.
Well, thank you very much, Paul, for picking the red line for us to watch. And I think it's time to pick the next movie that we're going to be watching. I think Adam has to pull up Wheel of Names.
Ooh.
Have you made it into the stream, Charlie?
I did. Just in time to see my name pop up.
Phenomenal.
Initially when I
wasn't ready, guys.
No, initially when I was trying to decide what movie, I was going to give you guys three things to choose from, but I've since changed my mind and just picked one.
I'm going to give you seven.
Those three. No, just one of them.
One of them to choose from?
You could choose from this one movie. It's a little bit different. Chris is a little bit different direction, I think, that we've been going recently. This is 1974 film called Space is the Place. The Sun Ra movie.
I almost picked that.
Did you?
What?
I mean, I had been like, that was on my list of like, well, here's another weird one.
I have actually seen this recently, and it'll be something to talk about.
I do not know what this is.
Samesies, where would I go about watching this probably very easy to find movie?
Like, if you tell me Space is the Place, I immediately think, oh yeah, Space Hog.
Which of HBO Max or Amazon? It looks like.
Oh, it was HBO Max because it was on like TCM.
HBO Max or Criterion.
It was TCM, so therefore HBO Max.
I have HBO Max through my mam, so I'm good.
I think we still have HBO Max through our Verizon.
to let you know how serious I was about maybe picking this movie, I have already acquired it through other means.
Sorry, I stole your pick.
No, no, not at all.
I know we had mentioned Sun Ra at least once on the podcast, which...
I don't know if I would have ever gone through with it at this point. Like, I burned too many beers.
You will know soon.
He's like a... Oh.
He's a jazz musician.
Yeah.
And that's putting it the least informative.
Yeah, pretty. Like, but I don't think I've listened to a lot of music, but it's...
I can't believe this is a sci-fi criterion. Oh, good. There's two versions.
Yeah.
It's definitely sci-fi, yep.
It's the kind of movie you discover by trying to find all the sci-fi musicals that exist.
Wait, sci-fi musical? Like Rocky Horror?
No, not like that kind of musical. Well,
I mean, there is
it contains music.
I guess
sure.
I don't know. I haven't watched it. But it does say music and musical in one of the genres, though.
It is. I've seen. Well, anyway, we have that to look forward to. So, for another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report, my name's Charlie Wallace.
And I'm Adam Gobeski, and special thanks to our three guests. We had Doug Sweet Gobeski.
Hey, I'm not quite sure why I got the name Sweet, but Sweet.
Paul Cherry Boy Hunter Wilcox.
Thanks for having me.
And Kevin Machine Head Vredevogue.
Yes, I was hoping for Machine Head. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Big fan of Bush there, Kevin.
I do love me some Machine Head. He just had such a big head.
And like when he chomps the thing down.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I was like not expecting
horses
that.
Through his body. Like.
Thanks everyone for listening to our show. Make sure to check out our website, GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. Just follow us at GW Report. And we're on the Facebook as well, just like our page, the Gobeski Wallace Report. I kind of forgot what was happening.
It's always so hard with the Twitter, with like the @. Like, you don't have to say @, do you?
I don't know. That's a question for the listeners to decide.
A Kaiko film or whatever. Like, that was actual information.
I'm sorry, were you trying to say Koike?
I don't know what the guy's name is.
You said Kaiko.
I know, because I don't know what the guy's name is. I guessed.
Takeshi Koike?
If only they had loudly
only
stated.
They had told you what it was.
They waited until all the way after the opening, after the conclusion of the Yellow Line race to announce that.
Yeah, and I had to turn the volume way down because it was too loud, too much racing. That's not true.
It is the kind of movie that when I'm done, I realize how loud I had the TV up, like, where I'm like, oh, I really gave myself the theater experience there.
A Koike film. There, now you can drop it in, and that conversation is the tag. You're welcome.